It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here at the Talk Station. And good morning, gentlemen, as Cecil and Wes are with us. Hi.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
I hope things are well.
We are doing well.
Doing good. What are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to talk about premise liability. And that's a big word for, you know, folks that come on to our property, be it our business property.
Right.
Like here at the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
When you have guests here, like Wes and myself. Mm-hmm. What is the duty of the folks who own this building to folks who come here, such as Wes and myself,
mm-hmm.
who do not own the building, but come here on a regular basis?
Right.
We also, many of our listeners own homes.
Mm-hmm.
What is the duty that we have to folks who come to our home, not only our guests, but people, Time Warner Cable,
mm-hmm.
stopping by to repair the internet, whatever
sure.
the case might be. What is the responsibility of the owner of the property
mm-hmm.
to the person who happens to be on the property for whatever reason, even if they don't have permission to be on the property?
Right.
Now, this is a extensive area of the law. It's been, there's so many cases mm-hmm. relative to this area of the law, but there's been some recent development in North Carolina, relatively speaking. North Carolina has attempted to simplify this, even though Wes sits over there right now with a treatise or a handout that we have
mm-hmm.
from a CLE that is, 100 pages long. we're gonna decipher and demystify this.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So from there, Wes, where do we want to go first?
Well, Wes, I would imagine this has been litigated to every nuance
yes.
you can possibly
imagine. Oh, yeah.
Imagine
my goodness. There are so many different variations of this.
Yeah.
I tell you how I got the idea to talk about this. I don't know if we've talked about this particular issue on the program. It is something that we deal with quite often. So in
mm-hmm.
11 or 12 years, I don't know how we have missed this one.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I was actually sitting in court yesterday in Superior Court in Wilson County waiting for my case to come up. So I had the opportunity to listen to about an hour-long argument about a lady who was walking out of a McDonald's who was hit by a car
mm-hmm.
By someone in the parking lot who was blinded by the sun.
Right.
So, hey, I heard a lot about yeah. premises liability yesterday, and I figured, hey, that would be,
uh-huh.
Really appropriate and would apply to, a lot of our listeners, because, like Cecil said, I mean, we own a home. We may be a renter. What obligation do we have to people who come on our property? We may be a landlord. We may be a business owner. So, the McDonald's in that particular case, they probably thought that they had everything taken care of and it was a safe place. It had been there for 20, 25 years. No one had ever gotten hurt in the parking lot. And now someone gets hurt pretty badly. Well, the argument in that particular case was that there were 13 arrows pointing the traffic of which way to go, but the only thing they did is point you to the drive-through window. There was no walkway. There
right.
was no direction as to which way you should go, where you should leave, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got into an argument on the defense side of it that, this was an open and obvious, situation.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like there was some kind of latent situation there. So we'll start.
And how much did the sun play part?
Much did the sun? Oh my goodness. So
yeah.
I'm just kind of giving a really big overview of a factual scenario there.
Yeah.
But let's back up a little bit and start with the small bits and move our way forward with regard to it. Yeah. Cecil's right. Back before 1998, it was a little more complicated in North Carolina because there were really three different classes of people coming on other people's property.
Mm-hmm.
A licensee, an invitee, and a trespasser. The Supreme Court narrowed that down really to just trespassers and non-trespassers.
Mm.
That's
mm-hmm.
it. And when we talk about it very generally, if someone is a trespasser, and that may be a question, is this
right.
person a trespasser or not? Mm-hmm. In some situations, it may be very obvious that they are a trespasser, then the only duty that we owe to the trespassers coming on our property would be a duty not to act intentionally in any way, willfully, wantonly, doing something, you know, setting a trap for someone, doing that kind of thing, or intentionally trying to hide something where someone gets hurt. So very low standard when we're talking about the obligation to a trespasser.
Frankly, I think that probably surprises some listeners, because I think the common on the street understanding is that even a trespasser, if somebody was breaking into your house and then they got startled and ran away and stepped into a hole the dog dug, that you would be liable for that. But that's,
well, you hear those cases, you hear those stories, you hear that, but in North Carolina, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You really have hardly any cases that have been reported on Court of Appeals or Supreme Court that deal with an actual trespasser because
you don't get that far.
You don't have much of a duty
as
it relates to them. So that's the trespasser side of it. And then when we say the non-trespasser, and that could be, you know, a friend coming over to your house. This could be the mailman delivering the mail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this could be
family member.
Someone, it could be a family member.
Your pest control people.
It could be a serviceman. You know,
repairman. Yep.
Right. Someone.
People under contract.
Yep, exactly. Anybody who has a reason to be there,
mm-hmm.
who's not trespassing, we kind of all know what that means. We just have a duty to act reasonably with regard to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, if there's some type of latent issue or some kind of issue that we knew or should have known of, then we have a duty to protect those from getting hurt as a result of that issue. For example, let's say that we live, you know, in an elevated home with wooden steps on the beach.
Right.
Well,
right.
What if we know those wooden steps are loose and we don't do anything about it, and the mailman is going up the steps and the steps break and he falls and breaks his leg or gets hurt worse? That kind of thing. You know, that kind of brings us to all the cases that we had several years ago with regard to the decks.
Oh, yes.
Over on Bogue Banks.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I imagine still being litigated.
Maybe before that started happening and it was on the news and there was one deck that fell and another deck that fell and another deck that fell. You know, maybe you would have a decent argument that there's no way that I, you know, knew or should have known of that particular issue. But then when it becomes publicized and it's, you know, an issue about, you know, the way that these decks were built years ago, then that certainly does raise a stronger issue with regard to whether the property owner should have known and then keep that property safe.
One of the reasons why most of them have all been inspected and reinforced.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, you know, these cases just go from A to Z, you know, as it relates to the different type of situations that we see. But you have to act, you know, reasonably with regard to that. In the business context, you know, let's make sure our traffic patterns make sense. Let's make sure that, you know, we have a warning if there's an issue that we know about with regard to, you know, a danger that we can't avoid.
Right.
I mean, let's say you have a blind corner somewhere in your parking lot. You know, let's at least warn with regard to that, because in some particular situations, you can't really fix the problem. You can't fix the blind corner.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way really to make it better. So then the obligation with regard to the property owner is to warn. You know, warning, blind corner, you know, that kind of thing.
Take the fast food idea. There's any number of them where you can drive up through the drive-through window and there is a door at the end of that drive-through lane where people are coming out and going across that drive-through lane.
Mm-hmm.
They can't see the cars that are coming through the drive-through yet. Mm-hmm. So they need to have a warning right there, right, to watch for traffic.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Blind corner, that type of thing. You know, if someone were to get hurt there and there was a warning, well, that's a great defense to liability with regard to that, because, you know, but then you potentially get into the issue of how this was laid out and it wasn't laid out correctly. And, you know, it could get into, you know, more broad argument, you know, with regard to that.
You know, Ben, it's interesting. We talk so much on the program about this, quote, reasonable person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Who is this reasonable person?
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this with regard to fiduciary liability, the power of attorney, the executor. What would a reasonable person do under all of the circumstances? You're settling an estate and there's a big stock account and someone dies. Would a reasonable person go ahead and liquidate that $300,000 or $400,000 stock account before the stock market takes a dive?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what a reasonable person would do? So here we go again with regard to premise liability, where the question is, what would a reasonable person do under all of the circumstances? There are certain circumstances with regard to properties that just cannot be changed.
Mm-hmm.
They are the lay of the land, or the topography, or the construction, or the age. It is what it is. It cannot be altered. You know, we have docks and piers that exist, mm-hmm. you know, in the waterway that, of course, belong to the owner, that are appurtenant there too. But many of these docks and piers are not in the best of repair.
Right.
Is it a reasonable person's requirement to either remove all of the underwater pilings or to improve the pier or the dock, whatever the case might be?
More coming up on this. If you'd like to call in, you can call us at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And we'll continue with Let's Talk Legal right after this. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. This is one of my favorite subjects, I mean, that we're getting into now, because there's so many little nooks and crannies to it. But it's on premise liability, and we're talking about how the law has been somewhat simplified in North Carolina, right?
Right. Well, it's real life, you know. Mm-hmm. People go to on other people's property.
All the time.
People own property, so it's...
And businesses.
You know, and unfortunately, people get hurt on other people's property, so... You know, these cases twist and turn, you know, through our Court of Appeals and Supreme Court, and they give us direction as to the obligations, mm-hmm. or the obligations of multiple, you know, individuals, whether that's the owner or the person who's coming on the property. So, yeah, as we were saying before, you know, we really, it's two different categories. We have the trespasser and then the trespasser.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally, just to recap, after the commercial there is, you know, with regard to folks who come on your property who are not a trespasser, you just have to act reasonably with regard to maintaining your property,
mm-hmm.
keeping it safe. And then for trespassers, there's really very low standard. You just can't act intentionally,
okay.
With regard to those type things.
All right. Say I have a vacation home and I put a yep. pool in the backyard.
Yeah, with regard to a pool, I mean, that really falls into a little bit of a hybrid category that we would call an attractive nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
And the attractive nuisance set of laws really deals with children, because the way that the cases read with regard to that is that, you know, our courts identify that children may not be able to appreciate the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the event that you have a pool and it's just open and anyone can come and get in it and it's not protected anyway, it's not
right.
locked and so forth, then I don't think there's any question that if someone, you know, one of the neighbor's children wanders over, falls into your pool, they
mm-hmm.
drown,
mm-hmm.
well, you probably got a real problem on your hands.
Or so. Even if it's drained and they just fall in, it's still
yep.
and injure themselves.
So, but what can you do with regard to a pool to make it safe?
Mm-hmm.
Well, really, what do we see around most pools?
Fences.
I mean, that's really about the best you can do.
I think in Newbern, at the old Days Inn, they didn't have a fence around the old pool there for a long time as it was abandoned, and that was an issue. I think it's taken care of now. But
that's right. So, okay, so with regard to pools, you can't, if you want to have a pool, all you can really do is have a fence around it. You can put up a warning sign.
Mm-hmm.
You can make sure that the fence is locked.
If you've talked to your neighbors, does that help? I mean, if your neighbors, the parents all know that this exists?
Probably not. I mean,
the kid,
each and every fact is yeah. going to be looked at under a microscope. But you know, the conversation with your neighbor might be some sort of mitigating factor relative to their, quote, 14-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about the fact that your neighbor has the little nephew that comes by who's 3 years old,
right,
and meanders over to the pool and falls in and drowns, even though we've spoken about the fact to our neighbor that we have a pool that isn't fenced,
mm-hmm,
we've got a problem. So anyway,
Wes, that's my thought. There's no question about that. I mean, you really still have the duty to avoid the open, attractive nuisance,
mm-hmm,
and to do that by putting up the fence and doing the physical safeguards. The warnings really don't help that much for children. I mean, the 3-year-old's not going to be able to read a warning. So the physical type safeguards. We have cases on construction sites, where, you know, you have to safeguard the, there's one case I've read about the large concrete, drainage pipe that,
mm-hmm,
rolled over a child.
Right.
I mean, don't place that on an incline, you know, mm-hmm, place it somewhere where it can't roll. You might not be able to put a fence around it.
Chuck their tires.
Exactly. Those type things. Now, interesting issue though that you bring up with regard to talking to the adult parent of the, mm-hmm, the adult aunt or uncle with, mm-hmm, the nephew scenario is that let's say that, the 3-year-old does come over into get into the pool,
mm-hmm,
or, you know, plays in an area that's dangerous, a construction zone or something like that. And they have a supervising adult with them and the adult does not recognize the harm, but the child is hurt. Well, that is not an attractive nuisance. It won't get you to that point because the causation link is broken,
mm-hmm,
because the adult should have intervened and identified the harm. We've got some cases that deal with that specifically. So that's a little different between, mm-hmm, talking to the adult,
mm-hmm,
and actually the adult being on site and just not recognizing the harm. I mean, you can't go, you know, over across the street to the construction site and say, hey, let's go play on these boards that are stacked up over there. You know, little Jimmy, I'm, mm-hmm, your uncle. Let's do that.
Yeah,
sounds
right.
fun. Let's do right. it. All right. Be great. And then the boards fall,
mm-hmm,
and then the general contractor who did not maybe secure those boards,
mm-hmm,
be liable. That's not the way it works as far as the attractive nuisance goes, because the adult should have, identify that issue. However, there might still be liability there,
sure,
because maybe the GC didn't act reasonably.
Right. Okay. Again, lots of nuances there. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys of law. They're available online at harvellandcollins.com. And we're talking about premise liability with Harbell and Collins, attorneys at law here. Very interesting subject because it involves every lot, everybody's property, right?
Yeah, no question. We were talking about attractive nuisances. You know, another area that we talk about is that where there's just inherent dangers all over the place is, you know, during construction.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the liability of the property owner? Let's say I own a piece of property and I have a general contractor building a house on it. And someone comes on the property and they're hurt. They fall down the partially built steps.
Right.
You know, that whatever it might be. Well, generally speaking, the general contractor has the same responsibility to maintain the property in a safe manner as a typical homeowner, a typical owner of, mm-hmm, the property. So they have to maintain that property within, you know, a certain reasonable level of being safe, even during construction.
Mm-hmm.
And that liability does not extend to the property owner. So under that scenario, I wouldn't have that responsibility. That responsibility is more in the area of the general contractor because they're in possession and control of the property during the job, mm-hmm, during the construction. But, let's think about, you know, who would have the right to come on the property.
Right.
I mean, really only those coming on the property are going to be the workers
or the property
general
owners.
Contractor, maybe the property owner. You look at some construction contracts and they indicate that you don't have the right to come on the property unless you're supervised by the general contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that puts us into the trespasser category if little Jimmy across the street wanders over and gets mm-hmm. hurt on the property. Maybe he's a trespasser, and maybe that does fall into the attractive nuisance category as well.
Mm-hmm.
So general contractors out there, you know, you do have to reasonably maintain your property if there's an unsafe condition. Let's say that there's a second story that's been built, but just open floors that someone can fall off of. Let's not make it easy to get up to that second floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the steps are partially built, let's block those steps until everything is safe and secure upstairs. Let's put up a no trespassing sign so that just that would be better evidence
mm-hmm.
in the event there is a lawsuit as to who really is a trespasser and who's not, or at least it would give the defense attorney a
right.
pretty strong argument if
right.
he got to that particular issue. So again, the general rule with regard to that is the general contractor has the responsibility to act like the homeowner would act,
mm-hmm.
and then that cuts off the responsibility of the homeowner, the property owner. So, you know, we deal with all of these different permutations of these different cases. There's lots of others we can go through, and I know we just have a couple minutes left, but it's really just that reasonableness
yeah.
standard. If you know of a danger on your property, you know, you need to either warn
mm-hmm.
or you need to fix that danger. This doesn't apply to open and obvious dangers,
right.
though, Ben.
We may have a question that gets okay. left open, but we do have Tom in Swansboro wants to ask a quick question. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good morning. Hey, I got a 52-inch above-ground pool with a small deck around it and a self-closing gate at the top of the deck, but I don't have the whole yard fenced in.
Yeah, I think that probably would be reasonable. I mean, if you've acted reasonably by putting a fence all the way around the pool, but not all the way around the yard, is that what you're saying?
There's a deck.
No, well, no, I've got a small deck on by the pool, on the pool, maybe a 12x8, but it's fenced in. But the only way they can get up there is through like four steps, and on the top of the steps, I have a self-closing gate.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that as you look at above ground pools, that's pretty typical.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you probably acted reasonably with regard to that. I'm not here to say that a plaintiff's attorney wouldn't argue something otherwise.
You would have to climb to get over that.
But you'd have to climb to get into the pool and to get up to where you could get into the pool.
Yeah.
So I think what you've done is you've acted
tall enough to even check himself up that way.
Right. I think you've acted reasonably. I don't think it's necessary to enclose your entire yard with a fence just because you have an above ground pool where there are already safeguards put in place.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thank you.
There you go. Again, it was of interest to everyone out there is premise liability. And we'll have more probably on this and in future shows. But I hope you'll tune in next time for Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Remember, you can call them at 727-252-726-9050. That's 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.